Hey, everybody, Matt, Jess and Dave here.
Sorry, Jess, just butting in quickly to let the listeners know that I'm going to be in Sydney this week, coming up the 8th to the 12th of May, and you can get tickets now via mattshieldcomedy.com, then going straight to Brisbane on the 16th to the 19th. So tickets for my show Dryer Dryer in Sydney and Melbourne.
Sorry, Matt, I'll just cut you off there. I just need to tell everyone that our quiz show, our web series, is out right now. Do go on the quiz show. You can see it on Stupid Old Channel for free on YouTube. Type in "Do Go On The Quiz Show" and you can see three episodes right now covering topics like Google, Queen Victoria, the Olympics, and we got five more episodes coming up. So like and subscribe, whatever that means.
They are big topics too. And I said Sydney and Melbourne. I meant Sydney and Brisbane. Anyway, let's get on with the show.
I'm still here too.
Oh, hey, Jess.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to Do Go On, a podcast with myself, Dave Warnocky, and I'm joined, as always, by two people that I will introduce at the exact same time. Well, one first, then the other, but it is Matt Stewart and Jess Perkins.
Hello, it's both of us at the same time. Hello.
Was me by a whisker there,
you
Jess?
Were, exactly, we went to had to go to the tape and Matt was just in front of Jess. How are both of you? But answer one at a time, please.
I'm pretty good, I guess.
Oh my god, it's going to be one of those bad improv games. We have to say the same words at the same time.
Is that a bad improv game?
Yes, it is.
I need a word, Dave.
give me podcast.
Podcast.
Is that how the game works? You give them one word and you both say it at the same time in unison?
So. Yeah, yep. That's how it works. Give us another word.
Yep.
How about good podcasts where people don't talk at the same time?
Good podcasts where people don't talk at the same time.
Thank you for inviting me, the impro teacher, if you will. Felt like a teacher role there, to be part of the show.
Mate, you're always the teacher role on this show.
Thank you. No, that's not good. They're not fun. I want to be fun. I'm cool.
You're not fun. I'm sorry. You can't force it. Don't try to be fun. That's not how fun works. You wouldn't know that because you're not any fun.
Yeah. As soon as people ask, what is fun? You know that you're not going to be able to explain it to them.
But don't the funnest people not even realise that they're fun?
No.
Now we know.
All right. Well, I'm here and I'm going to tell you what this show is, guys. It's not going to be much fun because it's my turn to do a report on a topic of my choosing.
Oh, it's probably tax.
It's all about accountants. You hate accountants.
I fucking hate tax.
Well, don't worry. It's not about tax.
Great. Then I'm back on board.
You're back in? Matt, how about you? If I don't talk about tax, what kind of win you over?
Or tax. I'd love to learn about tax.
Yeah, actually, you know what? I hate it because I don't understand
it. It'd be a really helpful episode, wouldn't it, if I could explain how tax works.
And while education is obviously a part of the show, I don't want it to be all of the show. And I don't feel like I could make tax fun.
Not even you could make tax fun.
And stories I'm the about funniest of the three of us.
Well, yes.
It's definitely not true.
Well, that's true. No, I think that's true.
No.
I think we all agree that you're the funniest.
You're the
even
funniest.
Yourself, which makes you
humble.
The Beyonce.
Funny, but very arrogant.
Yeah.
It's probably about, I'll put that on a poster.
What about me? So I'm not fun,
but
I'm also...
What about me,
arrogant.
Dave? That sums you up in a nutshell. Get on with the fucking show.
Well... What about me and my topic, which I'm going to introduce by asking you a question to jump straight into it. We always start with a question. And this week's question, no right or wrong answers, as
the improv teacher would say.
Well, there's got to be a right answer, though, isn't there? Because there's an answer.
Well, there's an answer, but you'll know the answer, and I can't decide either way. The question is, do you believe in curses?
No.
No.
Curses.
Yeah, curses. Curses.
All right.
Curses. No, not really.
So you don't believe in curses.
What about... I did, for a little while, believe in the Kennett curse, where Hawthorne lost to Geelong, like, 12 times in a row after Kennett said that they'd never lose to them again.
Ooh.
See, there is... I wanted to start by... I'm going to talk about a curse here today. That is the topic. But there's a lot of sports-based curses.
Yeah.
The curse of the Big Bambini.
Bambino.
Bambini's just a baby, I think.
The Bambino when he was a baby. I've got a little bit on a famous superstitious sport is baseball. And one of the most famous curses, as you have said, is the curse of the Bambino.
Oh, okay.
Which was a superstition evolving from the failure of the Boston Red Sox baseball team to win the Baseball World Series in an 86-year period. So they were really good, and then from 1918 to 2004, could not win it. And the curse happened, apparently, after they sold Babe Ruth, who's nicknamed the Great Bambino, to the Yankees, who went from being a very average team to being one of the most successful in the North American professional sports scene.
And Babe Ruth was left-handed.
They're the kind of facts that I'm interested in, Dave.
Well, do you have? I feel like that every time I bring up someone who's left-handed, do you have a catalogue of all the most famous left-handed
people? I have a book
people?
Called The History of Left-Handed. Left-Handed History of the World is what it's called.
Who else is left-handed?
Lots of presidents.
Of?
America.
America, yeah.
I'm pretty sure Clinton, Obama is. Maybe Clinton, yeah. Who else? Paul McCartney, I always bring him up. Queen Victoria, Babe Ruth.
Jimi Hendrix.
There's lots. Like there's 10% of the population, there's a lot of people. There's a lot of us.
Well, there you go.
Yep. High achieving. Molly Dukas. That's what...
Yeah.
Sinister. Mm-hmm. I think that means left.
Southpaw.
That's what Southpaw means. Mm-hmm. That was a Tomahawk song.
Oh, there you go.
I never knew what it meant. It
means like a lefty.
Rightio. Gotcha.
Think of Southpaws, that's a left-handed boxer.
Yeah.
If you're a Southpaw, that's your style. Another curse is a curse of Superman. Have you heard of this one?
Curse of Superman?
Yeah, it's
but
after Superman got
isn't real.
Oh, that's a good point.
No, it's affecting people that adapt Superman into TV and film. It's a bit of a curse. So a couple of them, the two most famous are George Reeves, who starred in Adventures of Superman on TV in the 50s. He died of a gunshot wound at age 45 under very disputed circumstances, possibly suicide, murder, maybe just an accident. And then there's Christopher Reeve, no relation, but he also played Superman in four films in the 70s and 80s. And famously paralyzed in a 1995 horseback riding accident and then died 9 years later. So, and then there's other people that are connected with Superman. These things have gone. And I could do whole episodes about the Great Bambino and the Adventures of Superman. But the curse that I really want to talk about with you today, it's been around for a lot longer.
Can I guess it?
I'm just going to tell you, it's in fact probably the oldest curse in history.
That's the best. Can I guess? Nah.
No, you're sure.
Is it the curse of Norm Smith, where he got fired
Jess brings
from
it
the
to
Demons?
Left-handers, and Matt brings it back to AFL. Please tell me about Norm Smith.
Norm Smith was one of the most successful coaches in the VFL history. I think it was called maybe Super Coach. Was that him? Anyway, I don't know if that's right actually, but he got fired, and Melbourne had won like a dozen premierships, and he got fired, and they haven't won one since. They rehired him, but apparently that wasn't enough to break the curse.
Wow.
Do they rehire him for the... Because people, the baseball ones especially, they do like ceremonies and things to try and appease the curse.
Yeah.
What? Like superstition sort of ceremonies?
There's one called the Curse of the Billy Goat, where a man kept taking his goat to the baseball game.
Sure.
And then one day the goat was really smelly, so they asked him to leave. And then he said... you'll never win again. And they couldn't win. So then he died, and they would get his relatives to walk goats across the field and things like that because they're very, very superstitious people in baseball.
Wait, can I have another guess?
So it's older than Norm Smith, I'll tell you that.
Tutankhamun?
It is! The famous Curse of the Pharaohs is this episode.
Curse of the Pharaohs. That's a heavy metal song by...
By who?
It's a song by Merciful Fate.
Merciful Fate.
Yeah. I don't think I'd ever heard of it called The Curse of the Pharaohs. So that's all of the pharaohs.
So there's a The Curse of the Pharaohs is sort of an overarching name for many possible curses from dead pharaohs, and the Curse of Tutankhamun, or Tutankhamun, as people keep saying in documentaries that I watched, is
you
the,
do a lot of research.
This, I have spent a lot of time on this because growing up, my dad is very big into Egypt, so I've had this. When I was, when if you asked me when I was 8 what I wanted to be, I would have told you an archaeologist.
Oh, cute. And I've said it before, but when I imagine you guys as kids, I just imagine tiny cartoon versions of what you look like now.
Muppet babies.
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
I didn't look very much different, I'm not going
to
lie.
Sure. Has your dad ever been to Egypt?
Yes, so...
Oh, thank goodness.
About 5 or 6 years ago, him and my mum went just before the sort of Arab Spring, and Egypt's a pretty dodgy place now. But they went there and had the best time ever, and I witnessed that by watching 3,500 travel photos one night. So,
oh, my God.
Wow. So... I know a little bit about Egypt, and I've been interested in this topic, so I want to talk about the curse of King Tut, as people colloquially know him. So do you guys know...
King
Tut. Sit on your tut. Got to hit the tut. Do you guys know much about King Tut? Love that.
How much of the stuff in The Mummy and The Mummy Returns was true?
The Mummy has never returned.
Okay.
The Mummy has never come back to life.
Went to an exhibition, I'm pretty sure. A Tutankhamun exhibition.
Yeah, there was one here in Melbourne. Did you go to that?
A couple of years ago. Went to that. Don't remember a lot. So I'm sure it's going to come back, but right now, can't think of any facts. But that's okay.
Do you know he was left-handed?
What?
Not true. I don't know. I don't know.
But he did play for the Melbourne Demons.
Yeah, and he was in TISM, so...
Long-term listeners will enjoy that.
That's possible.
Do we have
he was a child, right?
Well, he was once a child. That is correct.
Ah, like many, knew it.
Very good.
Thank you.
No, that's very good. So he was born in 1341 BC, and he died about 18 years old in 1323 BC. And he spent 9 years on the throne, so that makes him... He became the king when he was only 9 or 10, so he was just a child king.
Right.
And it's such a long time ago that not that much is known about his life in comparison to many other pharaohs. There's not that much record of him. But just to put into perspective, when he was alive, that's 3,300 years ago.
Oof.
So the Great Pyramids of Egypt, the Pyramids of Giza, were already 1,300 years old. So they're really, really old. But he died more than 1,300 years before Jesus Christ was born.
Oh, is that... Do you think they're connected somehow?
Some sort of curse? But King Tut, his father was the pharaoh. That's how he became pharaoh. And his mother and father were brother and sister.
And he died young.
And then King Tut married his half-sister, Anuksenamun, who had a different mother, Nefertiti. And both of these names are used in the Brendan Fraser films, The Mummy.
Yes.
And the characters are very loosely based on them. So there you go. There's a little bit there, Matt.
Wow.
Tut and his wife, who was...
His sister wife.
His sister wife. Well, they had
his Siamese twin.
I'm afraid it didn't work out that so well for them. They had 2 daughters, both of them stillborn. Because he was so young when he became king, it's assumed that he had political advisors do a lot of work for him.
No, I reckon a 9-year-old knows what they're doing.
No, I want to change everything.
Got good policies. Chocolate milk all the time.
Famous for their chocolate milk Egyptians.
Just want to watch Rugrats. I don't know. Are you too old for Rugrats at 9? I don't know.
Well, you're probably 3,000 years too early for Rugrats.
Good point.
Yes.
Probably too early for chocolate milk too, eh?
Well, I say he didn't do much, but the country was quite weak economically following his father's reign, who didn't do that well. But King Tut, before he was 18, he did change a few things, like the location of the capital city. He changed the god they worship, and he built a few shrines. So he did quite a bit.
He changed the god they worship, but he didn't do much.
Yeah, so his dad was like, nah, it's all about this god. And then he became king, and he was like, nah, it's all about this god.
Okay, cool.
And when you're an Egyptian peasant, you just got to say 2 thumbs up.
You got it,
absolutely.
King.
Yeah, yeah.
You got it, king.
I was fully dedicated to this god yesterday.
But...
part of this child says so. I now believe in a different cat.
Yeah. They got a praise. Spike the dog from Rugrats. They're all praising. They be praising.
They be praising Spike. Praise be to Spike.
His body has been examined. This is King Tut. And it's thought that he walked with a cane because of deformations or deformities in his left foot.
Left foot?
Left foot. So, yes, left. Left foot was the bad one, I'm afraid.
Yeah, no, it always is.
He also had a slightly cleft palate, possibly a mild case of scoliosis, which is when you have a spine is curved slightly. So he didn't get around very well.
He sounds hot.
And I've seen, if you go on the internet, you can Google, they've done like images of like, they've recreated what he would look like. And he looks
hot?
Like he's in pain.
He looks hot, yeah.
He's also wearing some sort of big, sort of nappy shroud is the only thing he's wearing. I don't know why they decided to pick that.
Real sexy.
Real sexy like.
I've got a bit of a crush on Tut.
Does it make you, do you get hot for Tut when...
Hashtag hot for Tut.
Please tweet that. It'd be so good.
That'd be so great.
In DNA tests of his mummy, scientists found DNA from mosquito-borne parasites that cause malaria.
Mm-hmm.
It's currently the oldest known genetic proof of malaria.
Oh, mama. He's a trendsetter.
Sack of disease.
He was not doing so well.
It's a sack of disease.
Are these factors combined with the fractures in his left thigh bone, which scientists discovered in 2005, may have ultimately killed the king when he was very young. So he was struggling health-wise.
But his parents were brother and sister. Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah, so.
And then his...
When did people figure out that that isn't the way to do it?
Wait, his parents were brother and sister.
Yes.
And then he also...
Married his half-sister, a different mother, that's right. And his wife, she did quite well. She remarried a powerful political advisor after King Tut got out there, who became pharaoh for 4 years. But then he was usurped. He was taken off by a guy who decided to erase all the memory of King Tut and his family. So he deleted... You know,
like in Men in Black, and he just erased everyone's memories.
Exactly. He just used that little device, and
no one
remembered him.
Wow.
But Tut was buried before he was forgotten and entombed in the famous Valley of the Kings. You guys heard of the Valley of the Kings?
Yes.
It's where pharaohs and other rich people, they were buried for nearly 500 years. But his memory was all but forgotten. And in terms of famous pharaohs, for a long time, he was nowhere near the top. So these days, you probably say, think of a pharaoh. King Tut probably comes to mind straight away.
Mm-hmm.
But to draw a political analogy here for you, Matt, it's kind of like... A former Australian Prime Minister today that barely anyone's heard of, like Sir Earl Page, who was PM for 19 days in the 60s. In 3,000 years, he's the one that everyone talks about, but no one's heard of.
He did change our God, remember?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I remember.
For 19 days in the 60s.
Yeah, remember that time we all worshipped that cat?
Yeah, I remember.
In the 60s?
If you were there, if you say you're in the 60s worshipping a cat, you weren't really there.
But King Tut lay there for over 3,000 years, pretty much undisturbed.
What a nap.
His tomb was small for a king, probably because he died so young.
You said he died at...
18 or 19.
18 or 19. So, I mean, that is probably fully grown, right? What kind of growth spurt are you expecting
to have? I'm still hoping for a little growth spurt. I'd like to be a tiny bit taller.
A little bit? You're hoping to get like maybe 2 more centimetres out?
Yeah, just something.
When was the last growth spurt you had, Jess?
I remember when I stopped growing. Maybe like 17.
So there's an 8-year gap.
Yeah, but there's still hope.
Jess, look at me.
I can't.
Jess, look at me, please. Oh no. Jess, it's not going to happen, mate.
Jess, I believe in you.
Thanks, Dave.
I reckon you're going to be the tallest girl on the podcast.
Hey, thank you.
Dave, don't promise her things you can't deliver.
I'm so sorry.
Thanks.
Hey, but you know
what? You're my favorite.
I don't think you're going to die young like King Tut because they were caught off guard when he died. So they had to put him in someone else's tomb. They weren't ready for him. So that's why he's in this really small tomb. And early on, tomb robbers managed to break in and do some thieving. But there were signs that they got caught, probably killed, let's be honest. And they didn't get away with a whole lot. So they quickly tidied up the tomb and filled the hole. And then about 100 years later, the rock and dirt from digging another tomb was just tossed over where King Tut's was, and the location was lost forever. So when the era of massive tomb robberies began a few dynasties of pharaohs later, no one broke into his tomb. They just let it, because no one knew it was there.
It was a great era.
Oh, wow. Yeah, what a time.
Magical time.
Again, if you remember...
The 21st dynasty, is that what you're talking about, Matt?
If you remember the tomb robbing, you weren't really there.
Ugh.
Now, there'd been a few stories of curses pertaining to Egyptian mummies and tombs and the like floating around for a few hundred years, but this discovery of King Tut took this idea of a pharaoh's curse to a whole new level, and at the same time, it launched a whole new era of Egyptology and archaeology in the area.
Egyptology!
It's like musicology.
Cuts to the 19th century, an English aristocrat named Lord Carnarvon, who was born in 1866, and can only be described as exceedingly wealthy. His family home was Highclere Castle, which you may know as the real-life location of the building known to viewers of Downton Abbey.
Oh my God, when you... Well, I don't watch Downton Abbey, but when you said might be known, I thought Downton Abbey.
That's cool. Did you know that building? It's really nice
pictures,
and looking.
Yeah,
so he was rich enough to own that and live there. And he owned and raced horses.
Was Maggie Smith there then?
Oh yeah, she was. Was she a butler? I've never watched
me
it.
Me either.
But I do enjoy the castle and the theme song. Good violin work.
Okay.
I'm unfamiliar, but...
Me too.
Just imagine a really sweet, like, 18th century castle house.
Oh, I like it. I like it a lot.
Now add some violin. And now Google Maggie Smith's face.
No need to Google that. It's always there.
It's burnt in.
Maggie Smith. Don't know her. Should I know her?
Yeah, maybe after the show, genuinely Google her.
All right,
so this guy, Lord Carnarvon, he owned and raced horses. He's also recklessly raced cars, which I mentioned because he had a terrible accident whilst driving erratically.
Oh, no. Did he play Superman?
He was not a super lord. He was ordered by his doctors to get out of England, out of the cold, and go to Egypt to recover in the dry heat. You know that thing that your doctor says? Go to Egypt for winter? That's how rich this guy was.
So just he pop himself, over Egypt.
He was keen to do that because he was an amateur Egyptologist and he'd already sponsored other digs when he was given permission in 1914 to dig in the famous Valley of the Kings, which I mentioned earlier. Ooh, getting closer.
Can you just quickly explain Egyptology to people who haven't heard of that term?
It's kind of just like archaeology, but specifically Egyptian antiquities.
Right. That's cool. It feels like you hear those things a lot and they just feel like bullshit things. Just like anything with ology in the end.
Oh, there's so many.
Study of Jess.
Gessology?
Yeah, gessology.
Percology.
Percology.
That sounds like one though, doesn't it? Percology.
Yes, it does. And I reckon there's people out there right now studying away.
Well, we heard on the McDonald's episode about... I still can't get over Hamburger University.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
I still think that's a lie. Is it? I don't know. But this guy, he's an amateur Egyptologist, which means he's just got a lot of money and he sort of sponsors digs and says, yeah, I'll collect the winnings, that pretty much. Then an archaeologist named Howard Carter, very important to this story, you know, Howard Carter. He'd been employed as an assistant on Carnarvon's earlier Egyptian-sponsored digs, and he was employed by Carnarvon on this new dig that he got to go at the Valley of the Kings. Howard Carter, in 1914, when he was hired by Carnarvon, he was 40 years old at this time. He was already very experienced as an archaeologist, and he'd been a dig supervisor and had risen to become the chief inspector of antiquities for the Egyptian government. There's a wanky title for you, Matt.
Not bad.
But a combination of a fractious personality and commitment to actually do his job ended up in Howard getting sacked from his government post. What happened was quite controversial. Some French tourists got rowdy at one of the Department of Antiquities sites.
Not surprised.
But they were pretty high up Frenchies. And he told them to get the hell out, because that's his job. Then they complained to Howard's boss, who told Howard to apologize, and he refused.
Yeah. How do you reckon he told them to get out, Matt?
I reckon he would have said...
Do an impression, which you're famous for. Well, English impression. He's English.
He's English, okay.
You're good at English accents.
Oh, okay there, chaps, this is just not on. Get out, toot sweet, okay. I will not apologise.
And that kind of language got him fired. Get out, toot sweet.
Yeah.
I was really
no,
hoping...
No, seriously, fuck off.
That's what I was fishing for. I wanted one of...
You're setting him up
I wanted a classic Matt Stewart, fuck off.
Excuse me there, boyo. I've had it up to here, okay? Now, a PO. No, seriously now. Fuck off. I've got a catchphrase.
I love it.
I definitely enjoyed that. But he got fired because of that fuck off. He got fired. And he got replaced by another archaeologist, Arthur Weigel. And Arthur, in 1912, he found a tomb that he claimed was King Tut's tomb. He was like, yeah, this is totally it.
Claim.
But...
Yeah, the claim makes me feel like it's probably
not true.
That's right. Well, by this time, by the time serious digging began in Egypt in the late 18th, early 19th century, what remained of the tombs that were finding were mostly long, dark corridors extending into the ground. And they had barely any treasure left in them. It was mainly like collapsed corridors, and They would just go in there and get the rubble out. That was pretty much what archaeologists were doing for a long time. Not much treasure remained at all at this time, and no pharaoh had ever been found in their tomb undisturbed, just as priests had left them when they died.
Ooh.
So that was completely unheard of.
They'd all been found with, like...
You know when your friend passes out at a party
yeah,
and you draw, like, whiskers on
it? Yeah, there was text everywhere. They're wearing a party hat.
Yeah.
Hand in a bowl of warm water. Piss all over the mummy.
That's a myth, apparently. The hand mummies. In the water.
Yeah, mummies won't piss.
Mummies won't piss. Once they're dead, they don't do it.
That's weird.
It's a myth.
No, I don't believe it. I reckon it's true.
Oh, you know.
Now, our rich man Carnarvon, he'd gotten the rights to dig in the Valley of the King from a wealthy American lawyer called Theodore, who'd been digging there for years, and he'd had a lot of great success finding stuff, but he thought that everything was already discovered. He
well,
was
listen
like,
here, see? I found it all. I found it all before you.
Wait, is that Sydney?
Yeah, Sydney's back.
That's Sydney's great-grandfather, Theodore Scheinberg. But he was like, there's no point searching here, boys. I've found it all, and I'm going back to Keith-Lorraine.
That's a weird callback to Back to the Future episode.
That's right. If you haven't heard that, then...
Go listen.
Fuck off.
Good on you, Matt.
I mean, when you patted me on the head as you said that, that really hammered home the point, I think.
It was a good way of saying, you're all right, Matt. You're all right by me. But Carnarvon and Carter, they were told, hey, there's nothing here, but you can have my dig site. That's cool. So you had to get permission, and there was only a certain amount of people that were allowed to dig there per year. So they got permission. But they were certain there was at least one tomb remaining undiscovered, and they were searching for the real tomb of King Tut. Carter had been told that the guy I mentioned earlier, Arthur Weigel, who'd claimed he'd found it, actually hadn't. But what he'd found was remains from the funeral banquet.
Oh, just a bit of leftovers.
So he found a bit of turkey.
Yeah, he found like a...
You know,
couple canapes.
Of baked potatoes.
Half a bottle of champagne.
Minimum chips.
Inside the paper.
You never... I was talking to someone about this recently. That never gets finished, does it?
Minimum chips.
No. Chips. Because I was out with some people and they bought two big bags of chips. And they're like, we're worried that we wouldn't have enough. But I don't know. No matter how many chips you have, there's always leftover chips.
How about this theory? If you get, say it's $4 for a minimum chips.
Yeah.
But you just ring up and ask for $8 of chips. Do they give you two minimum chips? I don't think they do. I think they get one minimum chip and add a bit more. So I think you're best to ask for two minimum chips. That's my tip.
Oh, okay.
Is
it
still a minimum chips if you get two of them? That's one of those questions of, you know, tree fall in the woods sort of style.
It's a tree fall in the woods. Did the bear eat the chips?
Bears don't eat chips.
Think about it, guys.
Trick question.
Got him on technicality.
But these dudes in the desert there, so they'd found this funeral banquet, so they knew where to start looking. So they were like, if the banquet was here, the tomb's probably close by, because you have the banquet near the tomb. So they had a place to start digging, which sounds really promising, right?
Yeah.
Well, they dug in the sand for the next 7 years and didn't find anything.
Oh,
every day, 7 years.
How do you know where to start digging?
Oh, because of that, they were like, oh, the
yeah,
guy
no,
found...
Yeah, no, but like, you've just found one bit. Anyway.
Oh, this guy,
I'm
Carter,
no Egyptologist.
Well, the archaeologist Carter, he was really methodical. So he would just do meter by meter, like dig here, nothing. Dig here, nothing. And there's a lot of desert out there to find. They didn't find anything.
What if it was 2 meters down?
I think he probably went 300 meters down with every meter.
Oh, no wonder it took 7 years.
Yeah, that makes sense.
This is Carter. It got to 1922 and Lord Carnarvon told Carter that he could no longer afford to fund what he thought was a useless project. You've been digging for 7 years, mate. We found nothing. Cut it off. Carter begged for one more season. He said, give me one more year. I'll do it even if I have to pay for it myself. So Carnarvon agreed, and only 3 days later, workers discovered stone steps that led to a doorway, and it was stamped with an ancient seal. That seal was quickly realized to be the mark of royalty.
Ooh.
So they got really excited. Ooh. Carter sends a telegram to the Earl, to Carnarvon, saying, hey man, I found the thing, but we'll wait for your arrival. You've paid for this. We've waited. So they wait for him to come over from England.
What would that have sounded like, Matt, when he's on his way over from England?
Just ordering refreshments on the aeroplane.
Yeah. Well, I'm on my way over now. Might just have a bit of a nap.
It's pretty good.
Exciting times.
Yeah.
In the 20s.
Glad I asked for that impression.
Me too. They don't call him the Roaring Twenties for
still
nothing.
A character.
Just settle in here, get myself comfortable.
Are you on the plane?
Plane?
Yes, I'm here on a plane.
boat? How would he have got boat there? Plane?
Another whiskey, please. I'm just going to have a little nap.
Another one? Two naps? It's probably would have taken a long time.
It's a long flight.
Well, I haven't settled into the first nap. Now, enough talk back there.
Is he flying the plane?
It's also flying.
Enough
the
talk
plane.
Back there.
Yeah, enough. Quiet you.
Quiet down. I'm trying to nap while flying this plane.
Jeez Louise.
Well, while he was waiting for the Earl to arrive, Carter, back at home in Egypt at his house, he had the first sign of something bad happen to him. He had bought a yellow canary bird to help keep him company. The unmarried man needed something to come home to for 7 years after digging through the sand for 12 hours every day.
Do you think a little canary is going to do the job?
It's going to be really inappropriate then.
Well,
let's see. What did you have? Let's see how inappropriate
cards on the table, Perkins.
No, it's fine. Just keep going. Now it's not funny because I've said I was going to be inappropriate. Now you just have to edit this out anyway.
Well, apparently all the guys on the expedition were excited about the colourful bird.
Oh!
And they said it would lead them to the tomb and saw the bird as a symbol of hope. But Carter came home that night and his servant ran towards him with a bundle of yellow feathers in his hand saying he'd heard a rustling and a cobra was eating the canary in the cage.
Well,
he added, "Master, this is an omen. Don't go into that tomb." Because the cobra is on the headdress of many pharaohs and used to strike enemies to protect the pharaoh. And the local workers freaked out because they thought this was the pharaoh himself coming to eat their symbol of hope.
Oh, man.
I don't really believe any of that.
No, I do. I'm 100% on board.
Nah. Matt, you're with Carter. He said to his servant, "Don't be such a fool."
I don't even believe it happened.
Well, take my word for it. I read it.
On the internet. It's on the internet. Exactly.
Oh, happened. Sorry. I didn't realize it was on the internet. It just feels like one of those things that was beefed up later.
No, Carter said to his servant, "Don't be such a fool. Just make sure the cobra is not in the house."
Yeah, good call.
So it's pretty practical, this guy.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
I'd do the same.
That. Yeah.
In fact, I'm going to check my house when I get home, just in case.
Yeah, I think that's a smart move.
When I go home to my lonely canary bird tonight.
Oh, your canary bird's lonely.
Well.
Well, that's the thing. If you've got a canary for your loneliness, what about the canary?
You're each other's companion.
It's got the cobra.
Well, when you're out at work during the day, digging.
Yeah.
Digging for 12 hours a day.
Canary's got heaps to do at home.
Like what? What's the canary doing, Jess?
The dishes.
The dishes? Reading?
That's not companionship. That's having cheap animal labour.
They're checking the house for gas at all times?
Yeah.
Really?
Smelling a gas leak?
What do? They die if they do that.
Yeah, they've got very sensitive lungs, so they smell gas before anyone else. So that's why I used to take them down the coal mine.
Do they smell it and alert them, or do they just
No, they look over, and if the bird's dead in the cage, they go, "Gas!" and run out. It's a very horrible job for the poor little bird.
It's not a job. It's a suicide bombing.
It's a suicide.
Well, write to your local coal mining union and save the birds, everyone.
Perhaps I will.
# save the birds.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Then on November 26, 1922, the workers had uncovered a second door, this one with the seal of the king himself, Tutankhamun.
Ooh.
It, however, also showed signs of thieves that I mentioned before, and it was visible where the tomb had been broken into. So Carter was really worried that he was 3,000 years too late, that someone had already beaten him.
Just by the skin of his bloody teeth.
Now, here's the opening of this tomb. Carnarvon was sent a letter by the mystic Cairo. Cairo at the time was a sort of world-famous fortune teller for celebrities. He read fortunes for people like Mark Twain and Oscar Wilde and things like this. And his letter warned the Lord to not enter the tomb. It read, Lord Carnarvon, not to enter the tomb. Disobey at peril. If ignored, would suffer sickness, not recover. Death would claim him in Egypt.
So he went,
Carnarvon ignored the letter, found himself in the passageway of the tomb with his daughter, Lady Evelyn Herbert, Howard Carter, the archaeologist, and Carter's assistant, A.R., nicknamed Pecky Callender, which I enjoy that
great name.
Pecky.
Pecky.
Fuck,
remember Pecky.
Love that.
Yeah.
Peck Dog is looking the goods. It took forever, but Carter, so it's just the four of them in there, and there's one door between them and the tomb that they've been waiting for ages. It took forever, but Carter chiseled or drilled a hole in the final door into the tomb. He lit a candle, put it through the hole, and he peered inside, and Carnarvon whispered, can you see anything? Bit of effect there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Carter replied,
feel like we're there.
Yes, wonderful things. Wonderful things. Ooh. What he could see was a chamber absolutely packed full of treasures. The entire room was glistening with gold.
Wow.
Now, what he tells people he did next was that after looking through the hole, he then resealed it and waited 3 days for the Egyptian official to arrive, as the law required. You had to have a local person go in there with you first. But if you'd been digging for 7 years and you just discovered a tomb full of gold, would you wait to go in?
Yeah, I would. I'm a stickler for rules. Rules are rules for a reason, Dave, and I'm not one to push them.
What kind of system
you've
is
you waited
like
7 years, you can wait 3 more days.
English people go over and just steal treasures from another country. How does that work?
At this time, there was a deal where it was 50-50. If you discovered it, you would share the riches,
right,
50% with the country, 50% with yourself. So there's a lot of money to be made for these people. But Howard Carter, I think, was actually quite... He had the right intent. But he still probably broke in that night. They'd been waiting for nearly 10 years, so they secretly spent all night in there. And Lady Evelyn, the daughter, she was the smallest, so she went in first. That'd be pretty cool to go in where someone hasn't been for 3,000 years.
It'd be creepy.
It actually
super creepy.
Middle of the desert, candlelight only.
Yeah, not creepy.
You don't
as
know
hell.
What's in there. Actually, I probably wouldn't go in there.
I wouldn't
I'd be
go.
Too terrified.
It's
be
in,
terrified.
Yeah, you're going into it. It's just someone's grave.
Yeah, gross. No, thank you.
Yeah, how do we feel about that? Obviously, people. It's called archaeology now, but at the same time, it's also grave desecration. But just in 3,000 years, we've talked about death a lot on this show before. Would you be caring if someone dug up your bones in 3,000 years?
Couldn't give a shit. I'm dead.
And I've been dead for a very long time. 3,000 years? No, I guess not.
What are they going to do with them?
Yeah, but even then.
Put them in a museum?
Museum.
Sweet. Cool. Do it.
I'm podcast museum.
Yeah, happy to be shown in the podcast museum.
Yeah, they dig up your bones. The bones of the greatest podcast. Mark Maron's on display there.
I'll have to put my dust on display there, as we discovered in the death episode.
Yeah, they'll have to put my pyre on display.
They won't find me. I'll be in space.
Yeah, they won't find me. They won't find me. I'll disappear under very suspicious circumstances.
Anus-related
mishap. News of the story of the discovery quickly spread, and Carnarvon, Carter, and King Tut became celebrities overnight. Newspapers around the world carried the story because people had been mocking them for years, and they thought they were digging up sand for nothing. But they'd done it. They'd found what was thought to not actually even be there. It was the first archaeological dig to be filmed, so camera crews came out and filmed it.
Oh, that's cool.
Very early on. Carter and Carnarvon made their first big mistake when they sold the rights of this massive worldwide story exclusively to the London Times newspaper, and they were accused of profiteering because Egypt was especially pissed because they felt that they didn't get rights to their own story because it's their history, and then only the London Times is getting the interviews and stuff like that. So they were really, really mad about it, and people were writing sensational stories about them. Sort of people were threatening to sort of, you know, protest at the dig site, this kind of stuff. And Carnarvon defended himself. He said that he made the deal for the money, yes, but also because he saw it in that way. He'd only have to deal with one press outlet. He'd do one interview, and then they get back to the dig. That was what he said.
Right.
But let's be honest, he just wanted the cash.
Yeah. He's all about the archaeology.
He spent a lot of money on this. And then we get to the tomb itself.
There's an easier way, like you could... If you were just wanting to not do interviews, rather than selling it to one, you could just say, I'm not doing any at all. That would be even quicker, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be even more mysterious.
How about that, Carnarvon?
Did dickhead.
Your Joker. Oh, dickhead's strong.
But... don't worry, something's coming for him. Tut's tomb had, it's just four small rooms, but it was literally packed with thousands of objects.
Oh my God.
They were so old that some of them would completely fall apart at the touch of a 20th century hand, so they had to be really careful with it. The rooms were packed because with...
the hands are different in this century.
The exactly. 20th century hand.
Different.
They'd never been touched by an Englishman.
It could tell. That vase could tell.
Not gentle.
That racist vase. The rooms were packed with major artifacts, statues, cabinets, vases. Even five chariots were inside, but then be dismantled
what?
So he could ride them in the afterlife.
Sure.
So he gets to the afterlife. And there's a dismantle. So he's got to first get out like an Allen key.
Yeah, IKEA style. Got to rebuild it.
Bloody hell. That seems silly. That's not what you want to do in the afterlife.
You want to just get on with partying.
In. Also, there's five chariots.
That's too many.
Especially
one man.
With a man who probably couldn't even ride one in his real life because he had a bung foot, a bung back, and a broken thigh bone.
Oh, well, in
so
the afterlife,
hot.
All of that stuff gets...
yeah, true.
Of course, because he worshipped the right god, remember? He changed it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank goodness for that. Any one of the objects that they found would have been considered enough to repay the effort of a year's dig.
Wow.
So it was literally the greatest archaeological find the world has ever seen.
Wow.
For this king that was not even, like he was...
like very minor on
buried.
The stage.
Yeah. That's weird. But so I guess all the ones that were
ransacked. You makes you think about all the
crazy.
Hundreds of pharaohs that, like the really famous ones. What were they being buried with? Must have been amazing, but they, yeah, just got...
six chariots?
Probably.
Six and a half chariots.
Wow.
What did he get with a half?
Spare parts.
Very good. Matt and you both pointed at each other. It was very cute.
It's a great improv game we're doing here.
Spare parts.
So the mummy itself was inside a sarcophagus, inside three mummy coffins, each nestled inside the other, sort of
like
babushka
doll?
Or matryoshka doll style. The two outer coffins were highly decorated wood, and the third was solid gold, the inside one.
What?
And you know the famous blue and gold mask that everyone knows?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's probably the most famous symbol of Egypt. That was his death mask put over his face inside.
Wow.
Inside the coffin.
Solid gold coffin.
Solid gold.
Because we talked on the death, burial, cremation episode, we talked about how expensive coffins and caskets are. Bloody
four. This is probably towards the top end of the scale.
Wow.
Probably. Yeah.
Probably.
I don't know what would be more expensive. What's more expensive than gold?
Double gold.
Boom.
Yeah.
Logic. Also, Matt, you were saying before about who's getting the riches. So I told you that at the time the Egyptian government gave any excavators a 50-50 split of whatever they found.
Mm-hmm.
There was, however, a massive catch. And that was if an archaeologist found an intact tomb, which means no one had been there before, then the agreement of equal division of the artifacts was null and void. And everyone agreed to this because they thought they'd never find one that was untouched. So then the Egyptian Department of Antiquities could claim everything because what the theory is the collective value of everything together is much more than the sum of its parts. And keeping it together is sort of what... it shouldn't be split up, it should be put in a museum is what they thought. So then they had this big battle over whether it was intact because those grave robbers had been in there a little bit and then got caught. And they were saying, is that intact? Is that not intact? And whilst all this was happening, the first signs of the curse started. On March 19th, 19th...
Everyone died.
Everyone died.
The first sign was everyone died. A second sign...
everyone
stayed dead.
Whoa.
No one came back to life. No, March 19th, 1923, a few months after it had been opened, Lord Carnarvon was shaving and he cut himself where he'd earlier been bitten by a mosquito bite.
Oh.
It became infected and he died 4 months and 7 days after the opening of the tomb.
Are you serious?
Yeah. So he
nicked himself shaving then, on a mozzie bite, dead.
And he died. And this guy had survived like a major crazy bad car accident.
What?
Only to be killed.
By nicking himself shaving.
At the time of his death, reportedly, all the lights in Cairo went out.
Get out.
The British Army, who was in charge of utilities at the time, couldn't find a reason for them going out.
Nah.
Just as quickly as they'd gone out, they magically came back on 20 minutes later.
Nah, creepy.
Creepy. Also, 2,000 miles away, back in England, at the time of his death, the exact second at Highclere Castle, where they filmed Downton Abbey, Carnarvon's fox terrier, Susan...
oh, man.
Was asleep in her basket in the castle. And at the time of his death, she got up, howled, and dropped dead.
Fuck off! You've got to be kidding.
It's the truth. Gospel. Matt, you are so in awe that you're not going to comment and say how this is bullshit.
Okay. So somebody... somebody must have discovered them, right? Somebody must have discovered his body. Like, let's say the housekeeper comes in, finds him and the dog both dead.
But 2,000 miles apart.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Never mind then.
So someone heard the howl. I mean, it kind of makes sense that he would have nicked himself shaving if all the lights in the whole city went out.
Yeah, that is. It was just the darkness. No, it had been infected for many days before he actually died. But the curse was widely reported around the world. And this is where the shutting out of the world's press really backfired on them, because the press, who were annoyed that they didn't get to cover the actual story, they started writing these really sensationalized stories about the tomb being cursed. And they started quoting scriptures that were reportedly found inside about people that disturb this, death will come on swift wings, stuff like that. The media is going crazy, but Carter shrugged off the curse as ridiculous. This is our logical man again. But because he'd been shielded by Carnarvon from the press before, now Carter was the center of attention, and tourists began descending en masse at the dig site of Tut's tomb to see the riches and treasures being dragged out. So suddenly he's being swamped by these people, and all he wants to do is get back to work, because he's literally obsessive with cataloguing the treasures. Not many people were allowed inside the tomb, but one of the few civilians allowed inside was George J. Gould.
Great name.
He was a very rich man who was invited by Carter. After his private tour, that night he came down with a fever, and by the next day he was dead.
No.
Yes.
But this is the 1920s, right? Like, everyone died all the time back then.
Well,
you take that into consideration?
Such a naysayer.
People did die all the time. In 1923, two men suddenly died after entering the tomb. Doctors said it was a fever, but some thought it was King Tut's curse. Next to go was Pecky Callender.
Pecky.
She was the bird, right?
No, that was the assistant, the male, one of the first four people in.
Oh, okay.
He was a Carter's assistant.
Pecky. What a great name.
See, I love Pecky it. Callender. I get Perky, but Pecky's better.
For some reason,
better.
I was thinking that was the little yellow bird.
No, we don't think we named the bird.
Oh, the bird. Would you like to name the bird 100 years after it's...
Yeah. Pecky. Can I call it Pecky?
Pecky's a great bird name. I'd call my bird Peck.
Oh, that's cute.
Both of them dead. Pecky and the bird.
Oh.
Carter, people kept handing him about the curse, trying to get interviews. He's repeatedly dismissed the curse, and then he set his eyes on the body of King Tut.
See, that would be creepy. I'd find that really weird. You know how in movies when they like open a coffin and, oh, I couldn't do that. No.
So, you know, so that coffin had been there for 3,000 years or whatever.
That's too long.
When he got, because it's in four rooms, they have to go from room to room and they get the treasures out of one room, then move to the other. It actually took like several months before they actually found the actual sarcophagus with...
Oh, really?
With, you know, that golden bit? So yeah. They got the treasures out of the first room first, and they had to move to another room. So I just imagine that you'd go in there, have a look around, be like, yep, cool. But no, they went room by room.
So do they know he was in there when they first found that? They assumed he was in there, right?
Yeah, but
I think couldn't quite get to it yet?
Room by room, they were worried that people had, you know, because they saw signs of people that had broken in. So yeah. They're thinking, oh, this room's intact, but how about the next room? Because they're very secretive with... They made it so if you broke into one room, it'd be hard to break into the next.
You're right.
Wow.
So, like, it was all sealed from each other.
So, you know, the Egyptians, they said they'd take the lot if it was
untouched,
intact.
Yeah.
Yep.
What would the English archaeologists get if they were... If the Egyptians took it all, do they get anything? Do they get just like a certificate of appreciation or something?
A participation.
A voucher for a junior burger at McDonald's.
That's what I was thinking.
No, I mean...
So they're still doing all the work. Like, I got no problem with Egypt keeping it all. I think that makes sense. But it just seems weird to me that it's...
I spent all that time and then get nothing.
Well, we'll get to what he got. We'll get to that.
I mean, they all got death, obviously, but if they survived.
Yeah. Well, Carter, so he was, I was just going to say, he moves onto the corpse, which was wrapped in 13 layers of linen. And inside the linen, there's 143 amulets that are wrapped inside to ward off evil.
143.
Yeah, it's a weird number, I know. So it's like, and they're all jewels, and they're all gold. They're like worth, you know, millions of dollars.
No, I hate that. Oh.
What? Do you draw the line 142?
No, I really like rounded numbers.
Oh, so like 140?
Doesn't 140? Have to be even. Well, even that would kind of get seven more, 150.
Yeah.
That makes more sense to me. Anyway.
But the rest
something
of the,
about me,
the rest of the
me.
Stuff that Egyptians did to their bodies makes perfect sense to you, though.
Oh, 13 layers. Again, 13 layers of linen. Why 13?
It's
10
unlucky. It's an
or 15? 13?
10 or 15.
Oh, so you five increments of five.
Yeah,
is
kind
okay
of, yeah. Yeah.
So 145 would have been okay?
145. Oh, see, that bothers me a little bit, but
so
yeah,
close
better.
So 150.
Yeah, just get 150.
Would you like me to lie and
maybe say
145? I don't think anyone's going to tweet in, but if you would like to and correct me,
yeah,
I do go on pod.
It would make me feel better.
So it was wrapped in this stuff, but the resins and oils that were used to embalm the body had turned to glue over 3,000 years, and to get the amulets, he couldn't get them out, so Carter had to dismember the corpse. He cut it up, including removing the head.
Oh, my God,
so if you think that there's some sort of curse going on, would you literally get the guy that may be cursing everyone and just chop his body up? I would be terrified.
But apart
let me
from
have
anything
a think
else,
about
like,
that.
Just for the, like, if you're an archaeologist who's trying to, find and preserve history, is that what archaeologists do?
Yeah, but he wants
why are you chopping up the body?
143 Yuck. Amulets. Is probably the reason.
145.
And you're thinking, 145 amulets. Within 2 weeks of performing this operation, so Carter oversaw it, two of its participants were dead.
No.
Two more dead.
Jeez, what a body count. How many have we got a count there? Have we, like, a body count?
Yeah, let's start a tally, body count.
All right, so we've
the
lost.
The bird we lost first.
We've lost the bird.
Body count.
We've
I'm
lost
writing it down. Body
Lord
count.
Carnarvon. We've lost his dog.
Pecky.
We've lost Pecky. We've lost the rich guy that had a fever the night he came in, George.
Yep.
Five. And then we have these two more guys.
Seven.
We're up to seven.
King Tut obviously is dead, but we won't count him.
No, I don't know. Does he? Should he count?
Well, he was.
He's the one cursing, man. Though.
All right, I reckon.
Yeah, he's part of the curse.
That bumps us up to eight. I reckon let's keep counting him in.
Tut in as well? All right, we're up to eight. I'll keep going with the tally then. I've got a little body tally. It's going to look weird on this piece of paper that I leave in the studio when somebody else comes in here to record.
What does
it'll
it
be
say? Egyptian body count.
It says body count, and it's just got a tally underneath. It's quite creepy.
I love that. So Carter kept digging. He was not perturbed by any of this. He saw the dig site as his own and only let certain people inside the tomb. He would let his friends
people
in.
People he was happy to let die.
Yeah, he would. Well, he would let his friends in and he would tell the authorities that they were all scientists, but he wouldn't actually let Egyptian government officials in because he would say they, quote, weren't qualified.
Oh
sure.
My God.
So one day he wanted to take a tour of his friends and their wives on a tour of the dig. He wanted to let them in. But the women were not allowed in as the government was like, hey, they're not scientists. You're using double standards here. You can only let scientists in if you're not letting us in.
Yeah.
Women can't be scientists.
Carter cracked the shits. I know it sounds a bit sexist, but Carter cracked it. He put up huge iron gates in front of the tomb and locked everyone out. He said, no one else can come in. This is my dig site.
Drama queen.
And as you can imagine, the Egyptian officials were not happy with this. And he woke up.
They killed
up,
well, him.
No, well, they close, no. Basically, his life was over. He woke up one morning and they cancelled his concession, which allowed him to come in, and they kicked him out of Egypt.
Yeah, fair enough. Like, what a fucking idiot.
Yeah.
What a diva.
What did he think was going to happen?
It's my dig site.
It's my
dig
site. There's probably like a billion
dollars. Yeah, and
it's
our country.
Yeah, and there's $1 billion of gold in there, so come on.
What a...
There's probably a lot of corruption going on. But when the government couldn't get anyone to do as good a job as Carter because he was so obsessive, he was allowed back in 1 year later.
Oh, it sucks.
But the deal was he had to give up the claim to any of the treasure.
Oh.
So, like, yeah, you can keep working on it, but you can't have any cash for it.
Oh.
So what does he get? He just
gets
a volunteer on
it. Yes. He spent the next 10 years in the tomb on his own, cataloguing over 5,000 items.
5,000? You'd be pretty happy with that, Jess.
That's fine.
Oh, yeah, no, 5,000 is good by me. Yeah, 5,006? Fuck off.
Here's a little fun fact for the side here. You know how that Egyptian death mask I was talking about before?
Mm.
You know how it's got like a really long beard? Like a little goatee type thing?
Yep.
When they found it inside, that had snapped off, so they reattached it. So 2.5 kilos of solid gold.
What?
Inlaid with blue lapis lazuli.
2.5 kilos of solid gold.
So they... In the 40s, they reattached it with a piece of wood to put on display. But in August 2014, the beard fell off when the mask was taken out of its display case for cleaning. Museum workers responsible used a quick drying glue in an attempt to fix it, hoping that no one would notice, but they left the beard off center.
Oh my god.
No one noticed the damage until January 2015, and it had to be repaired by a team of German and Egyptian experts who reattached it using beeswax.
So how long between it being botched? And
so for 5 months it sat there and no one noticed.
And those people who botched it are now dead.
Well, you say that in January this year.
Fuck off.
They were put on trial and I'm not sure what's going to happen to them.
Oh my God.
They won't be executed, but they might be. They've lost their jobs and they could be jailed for the because it's desecration of like Egypt's most famous thing.
But it was
like,
an what, accident,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, but what should they have done then?
Probably called the German-Egyptian team and not try to just sort of
stick it back together.
Super glue it back on.
Oh my God. You would be mortified.
Man, those, if they live, they'll be cursed for sure,
if
right?
If they live.
But back to the curse.
Well, the curse seemed to have stopped. That guy's back on site a year later.
Well.
Curse is gone now, right?
Well, we've got to go back in time. So during the time that Carter was madly cataloguing his 5,000 items, many other deaths were attributed to the Pharaoh's curse. So get that death tally ready, Jess.
Good.
Yep. Other deaths. 10th of July, 1923, Prince Ali, 23-year-old.
Prince Ali, Nadia Baba.
I forgot the Glorious He part, but yes.
What's that?
Glorious
from?
He, that's it, isn't it?
Aladdin?
I panicked and went, yeah.
Well, they Prince talk about Ali, Thebes in the, you know, I said he changed the capital, Tutankhamun. He changed the capital back to Thebes. That was one of his claims to fame.
Thebes.
Thebes.
T-H-E. But yes.
Sure. Where is, and are these cities still around? Thebes. And what did he change it from?
I can't remember. I'm not sure, to be honest.
Cairo is the capital now.
Capital
right?
now, yep.
And also some sort of a future teller.
Fortune teller fortune to the stars. Teller. I wrote that down.
Oh, that was, it's spelt very differently, but yes. It's probably Chiro, C-H-E-I-R-O, Chiro.
So Prince Ali.
So Prince Ali is a 23-year-old Egyptian prince shot dead by his French wife of 6 months, Marie Margarita, in London's Savoy Hotel shortly after he was photographed visiting the tomb.
Oh.
So the curse worked through his wife.
That's right, the French wife.
A curse is a curse.
Remember, so sometimes the curse works in the form of a fever. Sometimes it works in the form of a dog having a heart attack.
Sometimes it's someone who can't shave properly.
Yeah. It's an interesting, you know,
sometimes
curses,
it's murder.
Curses work in mysterious ways.
They do.
How about this one? September 26, 1923, Aubrey Herbert, Lord Carnarvon's half-brother, became nearly blind and died from blood poisoning related to a dental procedure that was intended to restore his eyesight.
Boom, up to 10, baby. 10 deaths.
Nearly blind and died. I feel like the nearly blind part probably gets usurped probably, by
isn't
the
negated
death.
By the fact that he didn't use his eyes at all in death.
I feel like, yeah, death in a lot of ways, you are blind,
good
right?
Good point, good point.
Yeah,
he was blind dead. Dead blind.
Dead blind.
Body count. Sir Archibald Douglas Reed, radiologist who x-rayed Tutankhamun's mummy, died in January 1924.
He was 102.
No. From a mysterious illness.
Mysterious illness, Matt.
That's more curse-ish.
That's more curse-ish.
November 19, 1924. 1924 still. Sir Lee Stack, Governor General of Sudan, was assassinated while driving through Cairo shortly after visiting.
By a cobra.
Get out.
There you go.
We're up to 12.
Arthur Mace, a member of the excavation team, died in 1928 from arsenic poisoning.
Oh!
Poisoning. So the curse is also slipping arsenic into people's drinks.
It's like an Agatha Christie novel, isn't
it? A curse is a curse.
Carnarvon's other half-brother died on 26th of May, 1929, reportedly from malarial pneumonia.
He's got malarial pneumonia.
Yeah, that could
which
be
is what Tut had, possibly.
Oh, cursey. And, you know, what often carries malaria?
Mozzies.
And the other guy before got bitten by a mozzie and then
he's controlling the mozzies.
So there was just a malaria outbreak.
Yep.
Nah. And a few, you know, a couple of...
Curse.
Yes, what are we up to?
Gun-related...
14.
How about this
gun-related
one?
Shootings, I was going to say.
Richard Bethel, November 15th, 1929, Carter's personal secretary, died in his sleep, but was possibly smothered. You read that, man?
Smothered by a curse.
By a curse.
Then, 3 months later, Bethel's father, Lord Westbury, committed suicide when he plunged 7 floors to his death from the top of St. James' apartment, where he reportedly kept tomb artifacts gifted by his son.
Get out!
The curse was just whispering in his ear.
He left a note blaming his son's death on the curse of King Tut. On the way to the cemetery, Lord Westbury's hearse struck and killed an 8-year-old boy.
Fuck off.
Reportedly, at the exact moment the boy died, so did an employee of the British Museum. His field? Egyptology.
No!
Chalk it up.
Reportedly. This is getting looser and looser.
I've sourced all of these people. Edgar Steele, only 4 days later, 57, he was in charge of handling the tomb artifacts at London's British Museum, died after a minor stomach operation.
Died. Dead.
Killed. Gone. Cast on.
Cursed.
I'm not even... We're bloody halfway there. Sir Ernest Wallace Budge, November 1934, a former keeper in the British Museum's Department of Egyptian and Assyrian Antiquities.
We're up to 20, baby.
He was found dead in his bed in Bloomsbury, aged 77.
Dead.
That's really old. I know. That's really old back then.
A friend of Lord Carnarvon, he had been responsible for displaying the artifacts found in Luxor. Oh, Matt.
Dead. What do you think of that, Matt?
Next one. Muhammad, and this is... We're cutting to the 60s. It's still going. Muhammad Ibrahim, Egypt's director of antiquities, argued with the government against letting the treasures from the tomb leave Egypt for an exhibition in Paris. He pleaded with the authorities to allow the relics to stay in Cairo because he had suffered terrible nightmares of what would happen to him if they left the country. Ibrahim left a final meeting with the government officials, stepped out into what looked like a clear road on a bright sunny day, was hit by a car, and died suddenly.
Dead. 21.
The treasures of the tomb were transported to London from a prestigious exhibition at the British Museum. Dr. Mahez, Ibrahim's successor, the guy that replaced the guy that just died in Cairo as director of antiquities, he scoffed at the legend, saying this his whole life he had spent in Egyptology and that all the deaths and misfortunes through the decades had been pure coincidence. He died the night after supervising the packaging of the relics for transport to England by Royal Air Force plane. Dead.
Boom. He died whilst... How did he die? He died while he was supervising.
No, the night after he scoffed at it and he packed the antiquities to go on a tour, that night, dead.
How did he die?
Dead.
Death. His cause of death? Stopped breathing or heart.
Do you think we're... Like, because you guys... You believe in this, obviously.
Well, Matt, do I...
The evidence, Matt. The evidence.
Are we bringing ourselves in... To the end of the gun?
We've got...
By talking about it?
What, possibly.
Are we putting
that's what I was thinking before, because we're talking about it.
We've got two more deaths.
But we've got a recording talking about it too, so... Oh, man. Okay, if we go, let's assume Evan has access to this. Evan, don't release it, because then everybody who listens to the podcast is going to die.
Oh, no.
Which is... That's a lot of people.
It's millions. Potentially.
I last checked.
Podcasts are free and accessible to many millions. I'll call this Curse of the Pharaohs in brackets. This podcast could kill.
And then, like, if that happens, right, if we die having just talked about this curse, then it would be newsworthy. And so then it would attract more attention.
It'd be great for past episodes.
Oh, yeah, it would be really good.
I will only sell our story to the London Times.
Good move.
Dave.
That's a good move.
Himself. All right, so one of the first people to see touched treasures in London was the only surviving member of the first four people to enter the tomb in Egypt, and that was Lady Evelyn Herbert,
So
Carnarvon's daughter. She was often interviewed over the decades about the curse, but would laugh and say, "Ha, I'm alive, I'm kicking, I'm 70, I don't believe in it."
Oh, you idiot.
She was the first in. If she wasn't the first to die, it doesn't exist.
Yeah, but then she turns around and goes, "I don't believe in the curse." Well, now she's going to die. She's dead. She's 100% dead.
So the curse is going to have to send a message.
Curse is going to have to be like, "Okay, I liked you and I was letting you off.
After her father died, she wouldn't go back to Egypt, so she never saw the stuff again until it came to London where she was living. Leaving the museum on her fifth visit, she suffered a stroke on the steps, which did not kill her, but left her very paralyzed. So, send her a message.
Oh, no, I've already put a stroke down on the list.
She has since died.
Yes!
Yes.
I mean, oh God. I just celebrated how old she lived to?
Sometime into her 70s, so a few years later she died.
A few years later, dead. Ooh. I'm counting it.
How about this one? Final one. 1970. A workman drops dead. T.G.H. James, at one time the Egyptian curator at the British Museum, told how when the Tut exhibit came to the museum in 1972, the foreman of the crew involved in setting up the exhibit suddenly dropped dead. Not in the gallery, but somewhere else. No one believed that this was due to anything but natural causes, but still the museum officials were so worried the death would be played up as the curse of King Tut, they swore the crew to secrecy. And everyone kept their mouths shut for over 20 years. Jess, chalk it up.
I'm really unhappy with this because I need one more for it to be a rounded number.
What? How many is it?
24. Wait, 5, 10, 15, 20. Well, 24.
How about this one? Howard Carter himself, the main guy. He lived for 16 years after he opened the tomb and died in 1939, aged 64. Does he disprove the curse? Or was that just King Tut looking out for him as the only one with the dedication and precision to properly look after his tomb? That's what you got to ask yourself, Matt.
Well, he still died young. Yeah, she was in his 60s.
That's right. Jess?
I want to count it so that it can be a rounded number.
Well, people claim that 25 deaths, which we just got up to, can be argued to have been caused by the Pharaoh's curse. But is it actually a thing?
Yes.
All right, I'll tell you this. Egyptians did use curses, and they did put them up on the wall in the hieroglyphics. But the reality is there wasn't any written on the walls of King Tut's tomb.
Maybe it was written somewhere else.
Well, many of the rumors started after Lord Carnarvon sold the exclusive rights to the story, so it was paper getting back at him.
Ah.
So they were using rumor-filled copy to sell copies of their paper and make him look bad for selling the story to other papers. But does that discount the...
Still, enough of them died in weird ways. Like, yes, a few of them died from, you know, like, illness or injury or something like that. Fairly normal reasons. But a few of them were weird. So I'm going to say the curse is real.
The curse is real. Matt?
I don't believe that you guys actually believe it.
So that's not answering the question at all, though, is it? What do you think?
Well, I know I don't believe it, but that's the famous last words. I've just bloody signed my own death warrant.
Oh, dear. I haven't, because I believe it.
I believe it.
I respect
I'm
you,
on
King
board.
Tut.
I respect the curse.
I think King Tut's a fuckhead, and he should be glad he died when he was
Yeah,
child.
True. If you've already signed your own death papers, you may as well just go.
Go out on a high.
Go out swinging.
Hey, I can't wait to ride your horses with you in the bloody... your five horsey chariots with you.
Horsey?
You fucker. Wow, we've sworn a lot this episode.
I will say, the final note on the story here. Carter had made peace with Tut, and the Pharaoh's bones were put back together and put back in the tomb and are still there to this day.
Oh, and that broke the curse.
So maybe that broke the curse? Or maybe it's still out there. It might be, who knows? You can go and visit the tomb. It's open to the public. You can go in and have a visit and
seriously?
You can see the bones. But
is there still stuff in there?
They have left some things in there, but... Because over the years, so many people have gone in there, the Egyptian government have started building a replica tomb, and they're going to possibly close the original one to the public in the foreseeable future. So if you want to get out there, guys, and you want to get the actual curse, I suggest going over to Egypt, go to the Valley of the Kings.
Wow.
Why would you go to a replica one? Feels like a...
Well, it's still in the valley.
A waste of time.
Well, it's still, like, dug into the sand. Yeah, it would still look cool. I'd go. Would you go, Jess? Or would you be scared of the curse?
I wouldn't be scared of the curse. I'd just be freaked out by the whole tomb thing. Yeah, no thank you.
No thank you for you?
But where's the body? So the body's still in there?
Yeah, so it's inside the tomb.
So in the end, Egypt did keep the lot?
What would I have seen at that exhibition then? There was stuff there.
So yeah, the main stuff like that death mask, that famous thing I keep talking about, the beard that broke off, that's in the Cairo Museum. Yep.
I feel like I saw the gold... coffin, but probably not, right? I don't remember a lot about that exhibition.
So you went to Cairo?
No, this was in Melbourne.
Oh, it sent it around. Yeah, gotcha.
It went on a world tour.
I love when art and artifacts go on world tours.
So good.
3,000. It's
picture him out the back just partying.
The weirdest part is that he's been dead for 3,000 years and then he goes on a world tour. Come on, that's weird, right?
Yeah.
But I'm hoping our comedy careers are similar.
Oh, yeah.
After we're dead.
3,000 years strong.
Yep. It's going to be the name of my my solo show in 3,000 years. 3,000 years strong.
Still on top.
The Jess Perkins Extravaganza.
Wow, extravaganza.
Yeah. I feel like after 3,000 years, though, you can be ambitious, you know.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah. Wow. Are we done? That was...
That's all I've got on that. I just want to say that after... I really liked Egypt as a child, like I was saying at the start, and this has rekindled my thing, and I really, really want to go now.
That was really interesting, like really fascinating, and now I'm terrified of the curse. And
the
if
curse
we die anytime soon, or in fact, when we die, I'm going to be very confident it was curse related, even if it's in 50 years.
Yeah, you'll be on your deathbed at 89 and
be like, it's a curse.
That curse.
It's a curse because of that podcast, that one episode of the podcast we did.
I'm so sorry that I've cursed all our listeners as well.
Sorry, everyone.
A lot of those deaths did happen a long time after, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But a lot happened pretty soon after as well, so.
That's right. And some could say that all those people would be dead now anyway, but would they?
Yes.
Yes, almost certainly. They'd be the oldest people alive.
Wow. That was really cool. Thanks, Dave.
Thank you, guys. I hope you enjoyed that, Matt. You are probably the most skeptical person on the show, but I think that I may have won you over there.
Yeah, I feel like you got him.
Claim that, but...
Yeah, no, I'm in.
Yeah.
You're into the curse. Great, because now you believe you won't die.
And,
perfect.
And when, when you're tweeting to us, make sure you use that hashtag I came up with earlier that I've forgotten. Hashtag hot for tut. That was it.
Hashtag hot for tut.
Hot for tut.
Well, if you do, we love it when our Twitter account lights up. We don't get as many tweets as we'd like. So if you want to jump on there, it's
at... Don't make us sound needy. We don't get as many as we'd like.
We've got a million tweets, so it wouldn't be enough. Yeah, I am needy. That sounds very needy. it's at do go on pod, at do goon pod, if you want to find that one. You can email us as well. dogoonpod@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. That would be exciting.
That'd be fun. Find us on Facebook too.
Oh, yeah, we're on Facebook
Give
now.
Us a bloody like, mate.
Do that. And we'll be back next week with another report. Matthew?
Yeah. I think I'm actually going to... People have been sending in suggestions.
You might pick up a suggestion.
Yeah, I've started collating a list. I'm going to put them all in a hat and pluck one out.
Great idea.
I think that'd be awesome.
I might start doing that a little bit more because I don't think we've taken any...
Not yet, no.
Not yet, but we do. So, if you want to send some in.
I've got quite a long list going, but... Well, I mean, it's not super long.
But it's not so long that there's no chance of you getting it in, yeah.
Yeah. I think...
Yeah, send them. Send suggestions, please. Please and thank you.
P.O. Box, lock bag. No, we don't have that. Just tweet them in, email them in. So, thanks so much for listening, guys, and we will see you next week. And until then, be good.
Or the curse will get ya.
That's right. Watch out, the curse of King Tut.
Hot for tart.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.